Hey everyone, welcome to the latest season of the SaaS Sessions podcast. This is the seventh season and I'm kickstarting this one after a long break. So I hope everybody is doing really well. So for this episode, I've got Vikram Bhaskaran on this episode with us. We've been talking about doing this episode for about 2 years now. So I've finally got his 30, 45 minutes from him after like meeting him in SaaS Bhumi the last year and now meeting him again in this year's SaaS Bhumi and then finally got like, you know, getting on a call and like recording. So for those of like, it's very rare that you are in SaaS marketing particularly and you don't know who Vikram is, but I'm just going to give like a very small intro and then I'll let Vikram do his intro. So yeah, Vikram has been into SaaS marketing for like over a decade. And most recently he was the VP of marketing at ChargeBee. Everybody knows ChargeBee and they're like one of the companies that are doing really great in terms of creating that demand, capturing that demand. And I would say Vikram and his team are the brains behind it. So, hey, Vikram, such a pleasure to have you on the show.
And likewise, Sunil, it's such a pleasure. And yes, I have. Like, it's been really hard for us to like get here onto this call together. So I'm really glad I was able to make it. And crazy, seven seasons, you said?
Yeah, this is the seventh season that's going on, yeah.
It's insane. So yeah, I've been a consumer of your podcast, but this is insane the amount of, you know, intelligence and knowledge that, you know, you're able to bring together on this platform. So I'm very, very, very glad to join you today.
Perfect. Yeah, with just like to add one small plug to everybody who's listening. So we ended sixth season with over like 20,000 listeners. So like hoping to get like another 10 now in like this season itself. So we've been doing this for like 5 years and 20,000 listeners across the globe, like really glad. And, you know, it's people like you, Vikram, who come on the show, like share those insights. And that's why like those 20,000 people come and listen to the show. So would love to...
When you say you're expecting 10 more, you mean 10,000, right? Because it would be really sad to just get 10 more extra listeners.
No, okay. 10,000 more.
Just clarifying.
10,000 more. But yeah, we'd love to know, Vikram, and like would love to know more about you, what you're currently doing, not really at ChargeBee. So what's something that you're doing and like, how has your journey been into the SaaS world?
For sure. So let me just start off also by writing a very, very, very quick background about my journey in SaaS. So like Sunil said, I've been in B2B SaaS marketing for well over a decade. Actually, it's going to be 17 years now that I've been here. I started my journey at Zoho and then I found myself at various companies, including my own startups. I was heading marketing for a brief while at Future Charts, which was the second most beautiful product company out of India. And then I was at a very, very, very early team at Freshworks, where I built the first marketing focusing on content and product marketing. And then much more recently, like Sunil said, I've been the head of marketing at ChargeBee, where we scaled our on product marketing, brand, and all other affiliated marketing functions for the last four years. And then in early 2022, I decided to move on from ChargeBee and start working with a small portfolio of startups as a fractional CMO. So that's what I do right now. I work with 4 to 5 startups at a time as their head of marketing, where I help them build strategy, devise execution gameplays on it, help build the team, mentor the team, bring in operational rigor and discipline to the team. And I also try to share what I know about the philosophical sides of marketing and narrative building. And so that's basically what I've been doing. I've always been a startup guy. I have worked. So if you look at my entire journey, I've worked at all of these organizations through that early chaotic phase. And that's what I enjoy. So now working with multiple beautiful startups, which are trying to change the world in their own ways, and being able to shuttle between contexts across these different companies, that I find it very fulfilling. So,
That's really nice. Like, you know, you've worked at Zoho, who's like that they're like the grandfather of like all SaaS, India SaaS, particularly to like, you know, companies like Fusion Charts and ChargeBee, who are like, you know, the more new ones and like, you know, doing it in different way and, you know, approaching newer heights, like, you know, quarter by quarter. So like, and for those of you who don't know, like as Vikram mentioned, he writes a lot about like his both sides of marketing, like functional and non-functional and philosophical marketing on his LinkedIn. So like there's a series of posts that he has done, and those are like really, really great, have some really great insights that you can dig into. Vikram, you mentioned before we get on to like what we're going to talk today, like you mentioned like Fusion Charts was the second best product company that's built out of India that you work for. Like I was curious, like what's the first
one? Okay, that's gonna get me in a bit of a political soup. So I didn't say second best. I said it was the second product company out of India, the first being Zoho. Of course, there were a lot of other product companies also along that time, but just the companies in my radar. And I also look at it that way because the governing philosophies between Zoho and FusionCharts couldn't be more different. In Zoho, we were taught a lot about, you know, thinking SMB, thinking volumes, and really finessing and fine-tuning and finessing that in. At FusionCharts, I go back to a few conversations that I had with Pallav back in the day into that obsessive need to refine quality.
Mm.
So for those that don't know, FusionCharts was a graph library. So data visualization library with graphs and charts and all of that you would typically use in your, say, BI software or your reports in your application, etc. And it was the obsession for just those tiny details of, you know, how chart would load, or you know, how a micro animation would happen and what kind of copy would follow with it. That upset, like it I guess opened my eyes to the fact that you can be that obsessive about the finer details of what you do. And I guess that's something that I've been able to carry on with me through the rest of my journey.
Interesting. And since you mentioned charts, I think on this session also, or in this episode, we're gonna talk about like one of the charts that marketing, like, you know, looks at daily, which is like funnels, and like not looking at it from like how it looks and, you know, how big it looks and what stages it should be, and not from that point of view or what color it has and like what size it has and all of that, but what the data like that goes into that funnel, and how do you optimize the funnel? How do you like, you know, avoid leakages? How do you make sure that like you have the correct stages in the first place, and what those stages should be? Like, you know, so we're going to like discuss like funnels in this session with Vikram, because he happens to be an expert in that area. So like, let's talk funnels, right? So Vikram, like I think HubSpot came with something called as flywheel in between. And I want to like, you know, address that first, like, what's your take on something like what is flywheel and why like funnels still rule? Like,
so there are these concepts of the flywheel and this thing and this arc and the spiral and all of that, and they're all valid modifications. In fact, I do subscribe to the flywheel thought process, in that, you know, this very old school thought of, oh, you just, marketing just acquires a bunch of customers, brings them in, and then the job is done. Or once you finish a sale, the job is done. I think that's pretty archaic. But the funnel is just, you know, imagining your funnel is just a very useful metaphor to understand your overall revenue machine, right? So I would say, understand your funnel, internalize your funnel, and then you build onto it into imagining how it would look like as a loop, a spiral, a flywheel, and all of that stuff, right? But a funnel is pretty common. It's like, you know, your ABCs and your additions and your rules of grammar. It's the foundation to your revenue engine, right? So understand it really well, define your funnels, know the different stages, and then you can start squeezing its juice for the next stage. And I guess we'll be going a lot deeper into that topic as we progress today.
Totally. And I think the people who are going to really understand and, like, you know, get a lot of takeaways from this funnel, if they reach the end of the funnel of this particular episode, right? Like, if you, there are funnels everywhere, right? Like, if I even have to talk about the funnel for like of people listening to this particular episode, there's like, you know, top 25%, like 0 to 50%, and then 50 to 75, and then people who have listened to like more than 75% of this particular episode, right? And you can derive so much from just by knowing that who about the people who have listened to only the 25% of this episode, which has just been about like the intros and all of that, versus like somebody who has listened to half of it versus somebody who's listened to the entirety of it, right? So that's exactly like we're going to discuss. So I just want to kickstart this with an assumption of we are only talking about like B2B SaaS particularly. So whatever we'll talk about will be predominantly focused on B2B SaaS, and it may or may not be applicable to like a B2C or like, you know, a PLG company, or maybe something different entirely, right? So
I would say it would mostly apply to B2B SaaS or PLG companies also. In fact, most of what we are likely to discuss today would be extremely relevant to both a PLG focused company and an inside sales organization. For a pure B2C, I would say take it with a pinch of salt. You might want to contextualize it and adapt it to your organization's flow. But the idea of funnels and how you define your funnels are still pretty relevant across disciplines.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's a good assumption to start with. So talking about like different stages, or, you know, breaking down a funnel, right? Like, how does a marketing funnel looks at a B2B SaaS company that's doing inside sales?
And that's a good question, mainly because the funnel actually looks different from organization to organization, right? Or at least the metrics that each organization pulls out of the funnel and the way they define each of these metrics might be slightly different. But very broadly, a funnel is basically an input-output system. So you're pouring something at the top. You're pouring visitors or leads or awareness at the top. And obviously, as you go through, fewer and fewer and fewer people are actually progressing through the stages until you get out of the other end, which is somebody becoming a customer.
Mm.
There are a couple of ways to look at this. One is to look at it as people are moving through the funnel, right? As somebody is completely unaware of the problem, then they become problem aware, then they become solution aware, then they become aware of your product, and then they come into your website, say they become a lead, they become, you know, they showcase increasing levels of intent. So that's one view of looking at it as people. The other is that, hey, you know what? Actually, that's not true. It's just a fact of the universe that there are 100,000 people who have a pain, only 10,000 of which are looking actively for a solution, only a thousand within that care about your particular solution, only 100 want to talk to you, and only 10 are willing to become customers.
Mm.
And this is an inversion of the same funnel discipline to say that, oh, you know what? The people are static. It's the funnel that is moving up through people. Now, whichever school of thought you subscribe to, the fact is you have a funnel. And from your point of view, right, from your frame of reference, let us assume that the funnel is static and it's people moving through it, right? It's just the same, right? Whether it's this way or that. Now, you want to create certain lines in the sand along this funnel that are measurable proxies for movement happening through the funnel. That's about it. You just want to create lines in the sand, which is why you create a bunch of things called an MQL at the top, which is a marketing qualified lead. And you might define a marketing qualified lead as anybody who downloaded a white paper. I would be a little more stringent about it. I would say a marketing qualified lead is only a lead that has expressed a very high intent to talk to sales, which means they've either signed up for your product or they've filled out that little calendar option which says. And from there, the next stage is likely to be a sales qualified lead, where you have some degree of qualification to say these leads are good enough for us to start selling to. And then you push them into the sales pipeline, where it becomes an opportunity and it goes from value prop to discovery to, you know, discovery to value prop to specs to pricing negotiation to closure and all of that, right? So here broadly, we just spoke about two stages in this funnel. One was an MQL and then there was an SQL. But there's a world of things that happens before somebody becomes an MQL, right? Before somebody becomes qualified enough to show a degree of sales hand raise. Let's say you have a bunch of people coming in who signed up for a webinar, who signed up for some piece of content. And now you need to drive them enough through your nurturing funnel to increase their intent, which means you need another layer before your MQL level. And let's call these leads for an argument's sake. And since these leads kind of fall somewhere in the middle, they're not very low intent. They have come to you and given you their email address, but they're not still extremely high intent. So let's call them middle, somewhere in the middle of the marketing funnel, right? And then you go all the way up to people who you've driven awareness to, who you have invested enough to for them to know that you exist as a product category, but they haven't come in any deeper yet. And these guys are absolutely at the top. They might be visitors or they might just be people for whom you've created a degree of brand awareness. Let's call these top of the funnel. Okay. So now what you're basically doing is you've created a bunch of metrics and you just... Now, at the top of the funnel, you might have metrics along the lines of brand perception, awareness, visitors, visitor level engagement, returning visitors, and all of this. Then you come to the middle of the funnel. Middle of the funnel, you could have things like consumption or the number of newsletter opens and consumptions that they've had to express a degree of, oh, okay, so these guys are continuing to be engaged and we're continuing to drive engagement. And then at the bottom of the funnel is when somebody expresses very high intent to go to sales. So that is an MQL and maybe from an MQL all the way down to an SQL. And this is what, like in a lot of marketing speak, you might see this as, you might see things along the lines of MQLs and SQLs. And you'll also notice that from marketer to marketer and from org to org, the exact definitions or exactly where these things get cut off in the funnel change. The only thing that matters is, A, you have an idea, you already, right, whether you're looking at it or not, you already have an input-output system in your organization. You already have a bunch of people coming in at the top into some way of expressing demand and a small fraction of which converts at the bottom into revenue. So that already exists for you, whether you call it a funnel or not and whether you're looking at it or not. The only other thing is where you draw these lines in the sand. And that basically comes down to the things that you want to measure and tweak, right? So if you have an inbound org which cares about, you know, delivering qualified sales intent, converting that sales intent into pipeline and being accountable for that pipeline, or you have a PLG flow where you are driving qualified product intent, and then you are investing on a product onboarding flow for these people to experience the product and then convert within. Those are the action points that you would be measuring.
Got it. Really good perspective to understand about like how anybody can think about funnel from, let's say, something like happens at the top and like a percentage of that. Never 100. I'm saying like if it's 100, then like nothing like it, but never 100 happens at the bottom. I'm seeing a lot of companies also like talk a lot about the buyer journey, right? And then how we look at the buyer journey and then we like, you know, decide the stages of the funnel, right? Like you mentioned about, let's say something like discovery, and then there is maybe like a tech evaluation, like maybe a negotiation, and then maybe like, you know, security, legal, if you are like in an enterprise space, and then, you know, closure, right? So now this is like a, like, you know, you're taking, and maybe there are like some stages here and there, depending on business to business, as you mentioned. And so when we talk about the buyer journey and then we create the funnel, let's say the in your CRM, like HubSpot, Salesforce, whatever. So we always create the buyer, like we look at the buyer journey, but then we create those stages based on how we want to look at those accounts or those people, right? Like, hey, we think this account is in discovery. Hey, we think this account is in, like, you know, hey, we had a demo call and now they're evaluating or they're looking at integrations and stuff like that. Hey, we think that they're looking up for pricing and all. But have you thought about from a different perspective that you're actually creating the funnel stages in your CRM, which like not only like is originated from the buyer journey, but also is in close alignment with the buyer journey, which you mentioned in the start of the conversation, where, you know, somebody is doesn't have awareness. Now they are aware. Now they are like, you know, problem aware. Now they are solution aware. And now like, that's how they're moving, right? Like what are your thoughts on that? Because I've never like seen any company implement stages in their CRM from a buyer's point of view, when we often talk that, hey, we have to look at the buyer's point of view, but there's no implementation. So
absolutely. And you do bring out a good point, right? And a lot of times we build these, what do you say, these layers, assuming that it's the buyer's journey, right? We assume that a buyer has gone from discovery to value prop to a deeper tech understanding, from there to negotiation, or from negotiation to a legal, to, you know, we assume that, oh, this is what is happening in the buyer's worldview. But it's likely that, you know, the buyer is going through this point of them getting internal conviction. From their internal conviction, they're going to, okay, so am I placing this against the right bunch of tests in the category and making a decent evaluation of it. From there, let's say the buyer has to make an internal pitch within their organization, right? So you want to invest in this buyer to make them your champion within the organization. And then they have to get internal buy-in, and from there. So it is likely that flow exists. And if and when that flow exists, it would be a very smart thing to do to actually incorporate that into your funnel journey. That said, right, an analogy to really understand and make the best use of funnels is to think of your funnels as these constantly narrowing bunch of pipelines, right? Which is basically what they are, right? They're funnels, which are like getting thinner and thinner pipelines. And in these pipes, you have, you know, every once in a while, you want to make sure that the water is flowing in the right way. So you want to put up little monitors to make sure that, you know, things are flowing through appropriately. And with these monitors, you also want to put in a little bit of a pressure cup to make sure that, oh, okay, so I want to amp up the pressure, or, you know, let it be the way it is. Obviously, though, to understand whether the pressure pump is doing its job right or not, you will need subsequent monitors ahead of it, right, further downstream from it. And that's basically what we're trying to do in the funnel, right? Which is why I said all of the matrices that you have are lines in the sand. The reason you have these matrices along the funnels are these are your monitors. And the only reason you're monitoring things on the funnel is to try and do some squeeze between. Right. Mm-hmm. So if I realize that my MQL to SQL is low, right, is not performing well, which means I'm getting a lot of leads which are expressing sales intent, but sales says these aren't very good leads, right? Could be one of two problems. It could be an MQL SQL process issue, or it could be a problem further upstream in that I'm not bringing in the right kind of demand. I'm getting a great bunch of guys who are expressing intent to talk to sales, but these aren't the kind of people we should be selling to at all. Right? And so that's why you have these monitors. Now, let's say I have a lot of deals that are getting stuck between my tech discovery and pricing negotiation, which means I'm able to wow people with my product tech, but we're getting stuck at the pricing stage. So maybe we're not being competitive enough in the kind of pricing that we're offering, or maybe we're not expressing enough value in the tech stage. So how can we amp that up? How can we drive more from a marketing point of view? How can we drive more enablement there? How can we drive more education that my AE can share with the customer to convince them to shift through the stage? So basically all of these, any metric, the only reason you're measuring anything in your funnel is to see where a blocker is and to start thinking creatively how you can squeeze through it. In the PLG flow, that's even more obvious. So obviously, like let's talk about two things in the PLG flow, right? Let's talk about from sign up to initial value, which is what we call the activation phase, and from activation to D60 retention. Okay, so you have a lot of people. This is a typical problem that a lot of PLG companies would start facing, say at a certain degree of scale, right? So you're getting in a lot of signups, sure, but it looks like 70-80% of them are dropping off before they even reach that first wow point, right? So how do you start optimizing this part of the flow? Now, more point products, not very complex products, have an advantage in that they can ease people through with a very simple onboarding. Mm. But for slightly more sophisticated B2B products, let's take a CRM product or a product like ChargeBee, which, you know, has so many knobs and buttons and things for so many personas within the organization, you need to go a little bit more creative. You need to play with, okay, so what can I do with the sample data that I'm seeing the moment somebody logs in, the moment somebody signs up, so that I'm able to show them the right, you know, context of data. Or how do I take them through step 1, 2, 3, 4 of the product? How do I get them to, and you have filter-based onboarding, you have onboarding screen-based solutions, all of that. Video solutions, for example, products like Train.co do a brilliant job of just helping you video the flow so that the user can come in 2 minutes, watch how this is done, and then actually do it by themselves. So you're doing all of these experiments, but you're doing these experiments to actually optimize for a very specific part of that funnel, right? Post sign up to first moment of wow. Then the more interesting thing, I'd say a lot of early stage startups, before you get to product market fitment, this would be your greatest nightmare in the PLG flow, which is your D60 retention. You are able to get a bunch of people. Those people come in, sign up. They're very excited. They do some initial action. And then by 60 days, most of them disappear. Right? Mm. And how do you actually squeeze through and get people to enjoy and appreciate your product for that 60-day period so that you've retained some customers? And that's actually a very good indicator of even product market fitment, right? For a PLG flow. And so you break the D60 flow into maybe D5 or D7, right? Into 7-day chunks or 5-day chunks. And so you're trying to see, okay, what does it take for a user to go from D0 to D5, from D5 to D10, and where is the drop off happening, and how do I squeeze through that? So if you look at it, all of these are basically funnels. You're basically figuring out different lines to draw in the sand, so that you can monitor. And the moment you monitor, you're able to start devising experiments to squeeze people from point A to point B.
Nice. That's a really good analogy and like a really good explanation to understand like what exactly like funnels are and like how do you look at it and what exactly are those metrics that you're tracking, and also like the squeezes that you mentioned, right? Like, and apply those pressure points when required, and obviously like experiment that I'm assuming like involves a lot of experimentation as well. You don't want to like put the pressure on something that's already working, right? Like sometimes that happen in hindsight as well. So like, just to understand, like you made it very clear, and I think you shared some analogy as well, like, hey, like MQL to SQL is happening, but there is something that is broken. Now how do you apply pressure and figure out like, okay, what's broken, right? So maybe the process is wrong, MQL to SQL handoff process is wrong. Maybe like the traffic that you're getting is you know wrong. So maybe if you're getting it from the paid ones, and if that is wrong, then like your audience is wrong, right? So that's like a way to like go back, reverse engineer a funnel and figure out like, hey, where are the leakages, or where is something that is going wrong? So I'm sure that's like one way of applying pressure and figuring out what like, you know, what is wrong. But can you like give a good example, like more in from something who is non-aware to MQL, like what can be like an example of applying a pressure point, or from, and like how you did from like MQL to SQL, like, hey, this is the way. So can you share some more examples on like, how do you apply pressure points and figure out, hey, what is wrong?
For sure. Okay. So let's take a bunch of different points along this, right? For argument's sake. So let's start with something simple. Let's start with from a lead to MQL, right? So this is actually something that a lot of B2B businesses are facing today, in that it is getting prohibitively expensive to acquire MQLs. Performance costs are getting insanely expensive. It's getting very difficult to get them at the bottom of the funnel. But it is not as hard to get people in the middle of the funnel, right? For example, even from a paid perspective, to get people through social ads, to get people through hyper-targeted ads, but also to going through a community engagement to places like Discourse and Reddit to actually talk to your prospects and bring them in to either consume a piece of content that you've created or to attend a useful piece of content sharing session or webinar. Recently, I believe Plum released the state of HR across a bunch of organizations, right? Like a state of HR report kind of stuff. And it's got insane level of love and traction. And that's a very, very, very middle of the funnel thing. It's not people signing up for it aren't saying, hey, I wanna use Plum for our insurance in my company, right? It's a means to get into a bunch of people's worldview, right? To get into their radar. And this is a middle of the funnel activity. And it's compared to a BOFU, a bottom of the funnel activity, this is a lot cheaper, it's a lot easier, and you can be a lot more creative. So let's say now you have built this ability to fatten that part of your funnel. So the question is, how are you going to convert these middle of the funnel leads into your bottom of the funnel? Right. Which comes down to creating more intelligent drip initiatives, creating more series of content, right? If Plum were able to create from here 15 pieces of content assets that continue to keep me engaged, right? Then there's a very good chance that I would, even if I don't directly convert, I would be convincing my organization or the organizations I talk to are probably in podcasts like this. I would be referring their initiatives and therefore spreading their good word and actually driving bottom of the funnel people. Right? So this is basically a squeeze from your lead to your MQL, right? From somebody who has displayed moderate intent in your organization, but not sales intent yet. How do you keep warming them up and then passing them over to months? Mm-hmm. In the olden way of doing stuff, people would just have static lead scores to say, okay, if somebody has consumed 10 pieces of content, I'm going to call them sales ready. I'm going to pass them over to sales. Sales is going to call them and bombard them with calls and emails until they convert. I guess that's kind of, I wouldn't say outdated, it's kind of irrelevant today. It's a lot smarter instead just create a pathway, a consistent pathway of people going from a very top of the funnel content asset to a middle of the funnel content asset to something that's deeper, to a comparison of solutions and converter. Right? Yeah. So now let's move over to a slightly more abstract slash difficult part of the funnel, right? How do you get somebody from the absolute awareness stage into becoming a lead or an MQL, right? So a great example here is Signals. Now, a lot of products like, for example, let you tap into buyer intent signals. So, which means anybody looking at your category of products, the moment they start looking at your product or your competitor or just your category, you'd be able to tap into not the individual, but at least at the organization level, right? Through reverse, which organization this likely is, right? And for most B2B products, you have an idea of who your target persona within an organization is likely to be, which means you have a decent idea of it's likely one of these 5 or 10 people. And from there, you are able to target them with communications, with email, with hyper-targeted personalized ads, and get them into your flow. Again, here you could drive ads and try to do an interrupt marketing to get them directly to an MQL level. What I've seen work better is to get them into a middle of the funnel stage to actually start consuming something. And these people are even more likely to convert faster from middle of the funnel to bottom of the funnel because they've already expressed intent, which means at least at the organization level, the fact that a buyer intent exists means that this organization is looking for a solution to the problem that your company is providing. Right? Yeah. So that is something that taps from an awareness to the stage, right? Let's talk about getting somebody from a completely unaware to an awareness part. Right? And here, you're not investing on getting somebody from an unaware stage directly to an MQL. You're just trying to get somebody from an unaware stage to making them aware of your product or your category of products, right? Which is where you would invest in PR. I think PR is a great vehicle for this, or analysts if you can, and if your gameplay is the enterprise, investing in analyst relations for this. But even things like doing some smart guerrilla activities in your events, your competitor events, in just throwing your worldview and opinions particularly through content, through open pieces, I think is a brilliant way forward in just getting people from unaware to problem and category aware.
Makes sense. I think those are like really interesting, like, you know, squeezes that you can apply.
And there's a lot of these things, right? We talk about these like it was invented yesterday, but there's like, for example, the very good foundation of funnels goes back in the world of marketing and advertising, goes back to the golden era of advertising, I guess the 30s, where we use this model that's popularly known as the AIDA, right? And it's as applicable today as it was then, right? Any ad or anything that you end up doing has to get people from a point of attention to interest to desire to action, right? You have to, first you want to grab somebody's attention. All the people whose attention you grab, only a subset will show interest. But if you haven't grabbed somebody's attention, there is no way they can show interest. Of those people who've shown interest, you want to get people to start desiring your product. Again, it's going to be a subset. But if you haven't been able to catch somebody's attention or get them interested, they're definitely not going to desire your product. And all of those people who desire, you want people to start taking an action. Now, therefore, your marketing gameplay is designed to capture attention, drive interest, get to that high level of desire, and then showcase a pathway to take action. Right. So that's how you're actually laying out your top of the funnel plumbing. Right. And this has existed forever. Right. It's not something radically new that has come out. So a lot of these pieces, if we just go back to the learning dynamics, we just go back to basic theory, and it'll help build up from there on a more solid foundation, in my opinion.
Got it. It's really good to understand, like, you know, even though like we have all these like new tech and new, like, you know, systems and processes to support, like, it's always often like we go back to the basics and back to the fundamentals, like you mentioned, right? Like AIDA, right? Like at the end, it's that. And like at the end also, like, it's very important to align this with your buyer's journey, obviously. And like, I'll wait for a company that, you know, comes and tells me that, hey, Sunil, like, we have aligned our CRM stages according to like what the buyer journey is. And I would love to see, like, you know, how that happens. Like, I've not seen it yet, and love to subscribe to that call and that meeting where something like that happens. But like, you know, like talking about alignments between, like, you know, the goals, like every stage, as you mentioned, like have some goals and some metrics that you track, even though they're line of sand. Like, you still have to track those metrics. So how do you align like different metrics, right? Like, how do you know that, okay, hey, this is like the metric for this stage of the funnel, right? Like, I'm sure that there would be like different metrics that you would track for, like, depending on what channel you're choosing, and like there would be funnels inside funnels and so on, right? But like, if you have to look at like from an overall perspective of somebody who's like an unaware, they become aware, and like, you know, they show some interest, they fill the form, like become an MQL, the lead is passed over to the sales, and like from there it goes on to the sales funnel, which is an entirely different game. But like, if you talk about this marketing funnel, like, how do you align like the goals and assign metrics to these different stages?
Yeah. So here I have probably a very unpopular view here, right? To me, everything finally boils down to pipeline. Right? There is only, technically it should be revenue, but there is only so much that marketing can directly own and control in the pipeline to revenue journey. At least in inbound org. And therefore, I defer to pipeline, because that's something that is pretty strongly in marketing's control. But there is only one thing that marketing is running towards, and that is pipeline. At the top of the funnel, right? At the acquisition part of the funnel. Now, the hard part here is when you say pipeline. There are some investments that you do for immediate pipeline. there are some investments that you do for pipeline, like for example, your demand efforts, your performance marketing efforts, your what you typically call your bottom of the funnel efforts. Then there are some investments that you make for pipeline 2-3 quarters down the road, your organic efforts, your content efforts. And then there are some investments that you do for pipeline multiple quarters down the road, right? Investing in community, investing in customer education, investing in brand. Now, these could take 6, 7, 8 quarters to actually start delivering results. I'll give you one example. I think in 2018, right? Sometime in 2018, we had this brainwave of creating some kind of an education for our prospects at ChargeBee. Right? Late 2018, early 2019 maybe. And the thesis we had was, all right, so we are in this space, and if people understand the intricacies of subscription management, if people understand the intricacies of running pricing experiments, or understanding how to manage their product entitlements, understand the nuances of moving into multiple countries, or localizing pricing, managing taxes, all of these peripheral things around subscriptions, they would just be able to build better businesses. And if they were able to build better businesses, for us as ChargeBee, we would grow. And we kind of started this thesis sometime late 2018, started investing in it very seriously through 2019, and I guess almost early 2020 was when we just started this as a very nascent thing to a panel of, I think, 5 of our customers, where we said, okay, come in. We have a couple of courses where you can come and learn the nuances of subscriptions, become a better subscription manager. There was a lot of pressure, both from internally, from our own teams, from myself, and externally from customers, asking us to force this to be a product overview series, right? Just a bunch of things about the product. But we wanted it to be something bigger than ourselves. We wanted this to be an academy, and we called it the Subscription Academy. By 2021 and 2022, this has now become a stream of top of the funnel acquisition for us. We get 50 to 60 people getting certified out of our academy every week, which is an insane number if you think about it. 50, 60 people getting certified on the nuances of subscriptions and billing operations and finance operations is just amazing. And that is happening. And it is starting to spill over into our bottom of the funnel, into the demand that we're able to generate as a brand and as a product too, right? So but if you think about this investment that started in 2018, it's been literally 4 years for this investment to start bearing fruit, right? The deal is, A, understanding that everything that we do is tied to a North Star, which is pipeline. But B, having the maturity to understand that not all pipeline is just short-term marketing, right? There are some things that you do immediately to solve the immediate hunger, but you are also constantly investing for the future, right? And that helps you connect the dots into what should you be measuring in your funnels? How should you be looking at your funnel, right? So you are doing certain things today that are purely for driving awareness. And that investment today might not be converting from awareness to lead or lead to MQL. And that's okay. As long as you are making that investment, and in that case, what you have to be, because you can't measure leads and MQLs, the only way to know if you are progressing in this direction is to measure awareness. And you are having a dipstick to make sure that 2 quarters down, 3 quarters down, do we have a connection for this to flow into leads and a connection for it to flow from there to MQLs? Right. So that is how I would measure each stage of my funnel. Right. So if you look at my typical reporting framework, I would always start at the bottom of the funnel. I would always start at pipeline, and I would go up from there. And then I would look at each of the specific key investments that we're doing. So if we had a bunch of brand investments to drive awareness or to drive top of the funnel, then we'd be looking purely at top of the funnel metrics for that. if we had, let's say, a massive event running or a user conference running, we'd be looking at the number of registrations and the number of attendees and the degree of engagement that came from that. Right? But you also put a pin on it to make sure that 60 days from there and 90 days from there, you are tracking how many of those people are moving further along, are actually people who attended this, are they moving into the next piece of content asset or the next middle of the funnel investment or to bottom of the funnel to have a pipeline conversation with your sales team.
Totally. I think like at WhatFix also used to follow the same philosophy. Like everybody in the marketing team was expected to get pipeline. We were we used to go ahead of that and like not just have pipeline targets, but we used to have revenue, like marketing used to have revenue targets. So we have to hit those revenue numbers, right? Like obviously one step before that is pipeline, and like that is entirely in our control. And as you mentioned, revenue is not, but still we were tasked with like getting revenues, and that, you know, that worked, that has its own, had its own challenges, but it worked really well and it helped build really well oiled, like well functioning, highly efficient, like, you know, marketing org, right? And we used to generate like shitload of revenue.
Yeah, but that's kind of what I'm saying, but that's not exactly what I'm saying. In that, as a marketing leader, you have to make sure that there is an end goal to everything that you are doing, which is connected to revenue or pipeline. But if everybody in the team were only focusing on revenue and pipeline, we would have a very short-term focused team. You need your content team to do some fun stuff, to do some broad spectrum things that probably drive awareness or that probably drive engagement, but doesn't actually drive pipeline or revenue right now.
Yeah,
totally. That's the maturity of the marketing leader to come in and say, hey, you know what? This activity that you're doing does not result in pipeline today, but that's okay because I know how, like, because I have the funnel in my head, I know how this is going to trickle down into a pipeline growth, right? And that's actually a very critical nuance in my opinion, right? Because you have people at two extremes. You have marketing in two extremes. You have at one, you have marketing teams which purely focus on revenue and pipeline and numbers, and it's a very boring game. Right, where, like, because marketing is supposed to be fun. Marketing is supposed to be you actually putting yourself in the customer's shoes and expanding your creative energy. And when you reduce it to just pipeline and revenue and, you know, numbers ticking up on the short term, it puts a lot of handcuffs and chains where it's not necessary. But then you take the other extreme where you're not taking accountability for pipeline, you're not taking accountability for revenue, which is where you see marketing teams and a lot of organizations doing a bunch of things, but things that have no bearing or relevance to where the rest of the organization is.
Yeah.
This is what causes mistrust between, say, sales and marketing, or between product and marketing. And, you know, you need to go in and try to rebuild those bridges, and it gets insanely hard. And what I'm saying is this, more than a middle ground, this higher ground between these two, where as a marketing leader, you understand that you are making intelligent bets. You are making hedging a bunch of short-term immediate pipeline delivery bets, but you are also making some bets which are very, very, very long-term. As somebody in the team, you might be working on a very long-term project, which means your KPI might not be pipeline. Your KPI might be engagement. For example, we had a very, very, very popular newsletter series at ChargeBee, right? Called the SaaS Dispatch, and then we rebranded it to the ChargeBee Compass. And the ChargeBee, the purpose of the Compass is not to drive pipeline or revenue. The purpose is to engage with our audience. So the team that's working on building every edition of the Compass, their only goal is to make sure that their readers read it, consume it, click through the links, learn something, and actually come back to the next edition. Right? Now, for us as marketing leaders, we know how to connect the dots from there to how people who've consumed the Compass might not immediately, it's not like they're going to look at the Compass and then open another tab on their browser and come into ChartBee and sign up. right? If they've consumed the compass, they've consumed 5 editions of the compass, and then they go out somewhere, they're looking for a subscription problem, they look at ChargeBee logo and they're like, hey, you know what, I know these guys, they come down to our website and they convert. And while this sounds like a fairy tale, it happens way more often than you would like or you would think, right? Mm-hmm. It happens insanely often, where people have consumed something very top of the funnel for a period of time, and then they realize the problem and they come to you because you are already a familiar name for them.
Totally. Yeah, I do understand. And one of these projects is very close to me as well, because at WhatFix, we used to, as you mentioned, like do those like very, very long-term bets as well, which doesn't like, you know, translate into pipeline or revenue, like even in the next one or two quarters, right? So one of those bets like we took was, so WhatFix is into digital adoption, and I helped the company get digitaladoption.com as a domain, right? And there, I mean, like, you create content, you like do whatever it is, you treat it as a separate website, and like you put so much content, so much events there. And then, like, you know, it didn't give us a lot of, as you said, like pipeline and like revenue immediately in a few quarters, but like now, or even when I was there, like it was working really well later stages, right? Like you have to make those bets and like increase that brand and make sure that like, you know, people like read about it, like from in the read about like how they read about ChargeBee, like from the compass, and when they required, like the, they became problem aware and they were looking at solutions and like, hey, I remember there's a company called ChargeBee who sends me an email every week or every month, and I should maybe take a look at them. Like that's like, you know, that's something where, which you can't put that particular account or that lead into any stage, right? So like that's like a missing stage in your like CRM, but those companies are still there and like no way to like keep a track, but then like often take those semi-educated like bets on such projects. Very interesting. I do know like it's been like close to an hour talking about funnels, and I think we can go more, and but I do want to like put an end to this and maybe like have a deeper down on the sales funnel side of things, maybe in a like a different conversation. But we wouldn't take like 2 years to do it. But yeah, before we like end on, go to the next round, which is like I have like a lightning round where I ask 3 questions. You have to answer like quickly with whatever is on top of your mind. I want you to intro like something interesting that you have been working on for a while, and we have discussed this as well about vectors and scalars. So like, would love to know like what is that, and maybe in short you can do an intro and what's something you're working on.
Sure. So vectors and scalars is actually this. I started putting down a collection of some of the frameworks that, you know, I've applied in marketing. I've seen some people that I look up to apply. And basically these are things from scaling demand to thinking through messaging, through storyboarding, to team building, etc., that, you know, I've managed to put together for scaling marketing teams. And I don't know how, in what form this is going to come out or when, but it's just something. But I call it vectors and scalars mainly because every time a marketer, you know, every time an organization thinks about a marketing problem, and I see this all the time where an organization, in fact, a couple of days ago, right, an organization had come to me and very early stage, they are pre-product or just about, they have a product, they have 0 customers, 3 revenue, obviously, and interesting new category of product. And their line of questions to me was about, okay, so how do I figure out what channels to double down on and how much should I invest on channels? And my thing is, you don't want to invest on channels. That is not your number one problem today. Your number one problem is to figure out if you have product market fit, to figure out who actually cares enough about this product that they would take out their wallet and start paying. Right? Only when you get to that point should you worry about your channels and scaling those channels. And this is a classic problem where, you know, you are looking at a certain problem and trying to fit it with a scale solution. While what you need at that point is not a scale, it's not a linear multiplier at all. What you need is something that is going to be a direction shifter. Right? For example, every time you think about repositioning your product to your category, you aren't scaling, you're not taking your old positioning and making it 5 times better and cleaning up and polishing, right? You are going back to your customer research and seeing if this requires a direction shift. right? In 11th standard physics, you might have learned that quantities can be everything that can be measured falls into these two buckets. It's either a vector or a scalar. And a scalar is something that has a magnitude, and that's all it does. It's basically a multiplier on whatever you have. While a vector also has magnitude, but the main thing about a vector is that it has a direction, and the value of a vector is that it's a direction shifter, right? And so I call this vectors and scalars, and that it just brings a level of understanding of each of the problems that you have in your modeling across different stages. Is it a vectorizable problem or is it a scalarizable problem? And if it's a scalarizable problem, it is about how can you amp up, how can you do 10x, 15x, 100x better than where you are right now. If it's a vector problem, it is about how can you very quickly iterate and think through and come to the right solution before you start multiplying and scaling.
Interesting. And what's a good way for somebody who's listening to like subscribe, like get more updates on vectors and scalars?
Okay, sorry, you are going to have to edit that little piece out. My cat like started screaming and I had to open the door for her. But yeah, so, you know, I've just started publishing these in various formats. Right now, I'm pushing these as a small series on LinkedIn. I'm also creating the content with people like you, with a few other friends of mine from the SaaS and startup community, where we're just trying to collate all of these pieces of content together and distribute it in the best ways possible. But I will be sharing it on my LinkedIn. I'm on or Vikram Bhaskaran. LinkedIn is pretty awesome in its name search. So you should be able to come in. I will have all of my assets there as I keep building them.
Perfect. And quickly moving on to the lightning round. So what's like three questions? Answer like whatever is on top of your mind. That's what lightning round means. So what's the one thing that has helped you shorten your learning curve?
Wikipedia.
Interesting. And like second one, like what do you know about your work now that you wish you would have known when you first started?
That's a hard one. That it's okay. That it's okay to try to do weird things. That it's okay to try break the rules, right? That content doesn't just have to be written content. It could be images, it could be infographics, it could be video, it could be a podcast, it could be just about anything, right? Or that you don't have to be suited up just because you are in a suited up industry. Right? Yeah.
Makes sense. And then the last one, like what's like one of the failures that have taught you something that have stayed with you for like the longest?
So many. As a marketer, I fail every day, right? Like every day, every experiment is an opportunity to fail and to learn something out of it. So that's just so many. And I don't even know which ones to pick. But I'd say probably my biggest failure that I owe a lot to would be my startups. So I've done two startups that have not had like any brilliant exits or, you know, any great thing to write home about. But they just taught me so much about things that I don't know if I would have ever learned that if I had not actually gone into that entrepreneurial journey, right? Things from, you know, very administrative, boring things like getting an office space and paying rent and being accountable for salaries for a bunch of people, to hiring people, to being able to raise some form of funds, to be able to build a product and take that product out to a bunch of people, and experience that humbling feeling of, you know, customers at some point saying your product doesn't work for me, and then going back to see what it takes to actually fix it, and then coming. So it's that entire journey, it taught me a lot. It gave me a new level of respect and love and appreciation for entrepreneurs and founders who do what they do. And because I work pretty much with founders in most cases, and since I mostly work in products selling to the SMB and mid-market segments, it also helps that, you know, I'm able to empathize better with the audience at the other end.
Interesting. That's like a great, like building a company is like always a great learning to have, whether you build successfully or you fail at it. Like, it's always a learning. Even if you have built successfully, I'm sure like you must be failing in like small things while building it, and then those are like collective learnings over time.
My weird level of respect for serial entrepreneurs. Okay, you did it once, fine. You did it twice, fine. You still wanted to test the waters, but third time you should have learned. It's like special respect to people who get into that serial entrepreneurship journey, and it is like the level of grit and perseverance and just the ability to wake up and just get stuff done is insane.
Yeah, I know it firsthand because I'm working with a third time founder at GTM Money. So it's like what you say is completely true. But yeah, thanks a lot, Vikram, for like sharing like 1 hour with us and like talking about funnels and would love to combine all of these things into in a short post. It would not do the justice because there's just like so much of it in the entire episode, right? So great insights, and thanks a lot for like sharing those insights.
Thanks so much for having me, Sunil. It was a lot of fun, and this is long been overdue. And of course, this is a topic that I guess we can keep going in for ages and still not do complete justice to it. But I hope your audience also finds this useful and maybe adds a little bit of perspective for the audience.